I have some notes here on what we're going to cover, which I will now open and read to all of you eventually.
Hello, everybody. This is episode 167 of the PC Gamer Podcast for March 5th, 2009. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, reviews editor for PC Gamer, and we've also got Logan Decker, our hardware guru.
Hello.
Josh Augustine, our intern.
Ahoy.
Andy Bauman, our podcast producer.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And special guest are the deputy editor from our sister magazine over in the United Kingdom, PC Gamer UK, Tim Edwards.
Hello. Can we be the brother magazine rather than sister magazine?
No.
We will make that change just for you, Tim.
The answer is
thank
no.
you.
I love their little fucks that they wear. They're very charming.
So
we don't wear.
We have Tim on today because unlike us, he has spent a little bit of time with Empire Total War. It just came out yesterday, and I have not had time to play it because I've got like three other games to review this month. But Tim, you're all over it, right?
Yeah, it's a great game, actually, just amazing. I was literally 2 minutes before we started the podcast, I was playing it and beating the shit out of the British, which is weird.
Take that, limey bastards.
Yeah.
So I'm liking it so far.
I do really like it. I mean, I've barely scratched the surface of the campaign stuff. The campaign map is far more detailed from what I can see than the kind of the medieval and Rome games. I'm just amazed by the battles, like how differently they play, though, because that time of history is about men standing at each other and shooting rather than men kind of walking up to each other and hitting. And so it kind of changes the dynamic of what you do fairly significantly.
Right.
I also like the hats, which is important.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, they invented the tri-corner hat during that time period, didn't they?
That's one of the many significant advances that technology allowed for, was the triple-cornered hat.
Right, before they only had two corners.
Yes.
Well, actually, that was by accident, because they had four corners, but when somebody sliced it with a sword, you know, and then they had the idea. Yeah, that's how it happened, I think.
Voila. Right.
That's on NPR.
The weird things, though, is that I'm not entirely convinced by the sea battles. I quite like them. And it's one of those things where you're really glad they're there and like glad to finally play them. But I think even Creative Assembly have been saying that, you know, we've been working on land battles for, you know, almost 10 years now, whereas sea battles is our first attempt. And it does kind of feel like this is the first attempt for them.
Right, yeah, it's the first time they've tried anything like this and really filled in a big gap. I mean, before I haven't personally spent a lot of time with the series, but I have played enough to you know, I got in a little bit and like the sea battles, you know, you've got the same kind of, you know, navy units that you have at the army units on the campaign map, but then when you go into the battle, it's automatically auto resolve. Which is kind of disappointing after you see the giant land battle. So this is, you know, fills in that big gap. But it is versus.
Is the Total War series like massively popular in the US, do you think, as it is in the UK and Europe?
Not as big here.
I would say quite as not quite as much.
Yeah, it's, you know, people like it. It gets a lot of respect. It's always reviewed very well. But it's not as big a game. We don't get as much feedback about it from readers as we do for shooters mostly and bigger RTSs Red Alert 3 and that ilk. But you know, it definitely is a very respected series over here.
Do you think that's because of the type of game it is, or because it's? I mean, because one of the theories we've always had is that, and apologies for the kind of vague insult here, that it's. How to put this? Okay, so because it's not got America in it, America won't like it.
Well, I mean, there is always, you know, the identification aspect of it. You know, you kind of want to play as a home team. And up until this version.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to butt in there.
No,
I was just going to say that I will totally buy that argument. You know, America is a huge country. We're enormous, right? And I think that we do have a sense of being kind of, you know, almost isolated a world unto ourselves. And so I don't think Americans are quite as receptive to games that, you know, that are centered around other nationalities or other, you know, whatever.
Also, we really like ourselves.
Exactly. So I think it's true, you know, and I think it shows up in, you know, I think the fact that like Hollywood is centered in America kind of reinforces that, you know, because all this mass culture comes out of America, and you know, we don't see foreign films as often, and then it shows up in some horrible ways, like
dude,
what they did to the.
No one watches foreign films. That's just ludicrous. Everyone in the world is just watching American Pie, American Pie 2, American Pie 3.
Really? Is that true? Whoa! Yeah, that explains a lot.
Because we don't watch American Pie 2, 3, 4, 5. they're just watching our leftover trash.
I think the worst manifestation of American-centric thinking was adding Tom Sawyer into the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That was a horror beyond imagination. And actually, let's not even talk about that.
Yeah, please don't.
Let's just move on. And so, yeah, I will buy that argument completely.
Yeah, we're in Watchmen time, not League of Extraordinary.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just smarting from that still, years later.
The one criticism I have about Empire, though, actually, is if you've got a relatively shit PC, come back onto the subject. God, it looks awful. It's really like they've got this kind of weird level of detail thing going on, so that horses and, you know, everyone else seems to turn into sprites when they get far away, and the landscapes don't look much at low details. The landscapes don't much look better than, say, Rome even. Yeah, check the system specs on it.
Right. Well, I mean, it's nice that at least it'll scale down to look, you know, crap. I actually have the box right in front of me here, so like the system specs they have on it are requires a 2.4 gigahertz CPU, single core, a gigabyte of RAM, and 256 megabytes Pixel Shader 2 graphics card. So
okay,
that's
a pretty low spec.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you see, you're saying that. The PC I was just playing it on is a Phenom quad core with 2 gigs of RAM, and let me just have a look at the graphics card. It is a Radeon HD 3850, and it looked ropey.
Really?
And that was just a kind of auto select graphics options.
Right, and I noticed when I was playing the demo, the load times are a bit long.
That's much better in the full game, actually.
Really good, because that took a while. And it seemed to be using only one core. You know, I have the CPU monitor on my Logitech keyboard. It seemed to like be maxing out one of my four cores, but not really touching the rest of them when it was loading.
Did you find that a little bit offensive?
Can I just make a note that basically Tim called us all xenophobic hicks in his comment earlier. That's just sort of good.
Yes, but he did it.
I just want to pull that out, and let's move on. You know,
he did it with a British accent, so it was sophisticated.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Amazing. Comes on our podcast, causes the entire country a bunch of xenophobic hicks. Wow, it takes on 300 million people just like that.
You know, for the record, as of yesterday, Gary Whitta is now an American citizen. So
take that.
So
see, I even know who Gary Whitta is, which is an amazing moment.
So actually, he's got dual citizenship. So he can criticize both people. Anyway, so yeah, congratulations to him, by the way.
Testing.
Yeah. So we'll have to ask him which side he's going to play as in Empire Total War.
They should do that when you become a citizen, just before they put you in front of it, and then they say, "Okay, let's see." You know,
this is the final.
That's
citizenship.
That's a weird citizenship test. So I have to say, that is a very strange way of deciding.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to beat your old country as your new country.
So in a in the UK, what we actually do is, have you seen did you get the show called Takahashi's Castle?
I've heard of it.
So it's a game show in which you just kind of beat each other to death with, oh, you don't actually beat each other to death, but you certainly beat each other up with pugil sticks and run over goobas and the kind of rest of it. That's what we do in Dover, our immigration. Yeah.
I'm totally in.
So yeah, I'm definitely going to give Empire Total War a shot because, you know, like I played some Medieval 2 and it didn't really grab me. Maybe because I'm a xenophobic kick. I don't know. but I don't think the, I don't think that the strategic layer was really, I think the interface left a lot to be desired. I think I was just coming off playing Civ 4, which has a really polished interface for that kind of thing. And so going from that to Medieval 2 was a bit of a shock, and I just wanted to play the tactical battles. I wasn't as into, you know, marrying my princesses and managing my generals and stuff. But I'm gonna give this another try because I from what I've seen, the interface is a little bit more polished.
What about marrying your generals and managing your princesses? No, that's a different game. Sorry.
Right. So I'm looking forward to it. I actually downloaded it off Steam, and I'm copying it to my external drive. I don't know if a bunch of you guys out there can try this out at if your work doesn't watch you very closely. If you have a high speed connection at work, you can download your games at work, copy them onto a drive, and take them home. That's what I do.
That's awesome. That's a really good idea. I'm gonna start doing that.
It works pretty well. I did run into a little problem with Empire Total War, though, because my external drive is formatted in FAT32, and one of the files in Empire is
larger than 4 gigs.
Yeah. So it was giving me an error message saying there was not enough disk space, which is the entirely wrong error message for that situation. It's your drive is the wrong format for a file of this size. But I use Steam's backup utility, and hopefully that will work better than it did with GTA 4.
I think the file size limit is 2 gigs.
Is it?
Yes, for FAT32. And the reason it gives you that error message is because, like, if it's looking at a FAT32 system, basically FAT32 doesn't even know that anything larger exists. So, yeah, it can't manage to pull out anything from its, you know, message set, probably. It just has no awareness of anything larger than that. And there was a time in our world, you know, when, you know,
2 gigs, what do you need 2 gigs for?
I believe we called that the Medieval 2 era.
Yes.
I've used Steam's backup utility, and hopefully that will work for me, because in the past it has been a bit flaky. I tried to do it with GTA 4, and I took it home and tried to restore the backup, and it just started re-downloading the whole thing. It's like, oh, that just defeated the whole purpose.
And to extend Dan's point just a little bit, sorry to interrupt, Josh, but also if you build a new PC or if you're upgrading or something like that, you can just back up all your Steam apps onto a drive, and then you don't have to re-download them. It's fantastic.
Right. Yeah, that's one of my favorite Steam features.
Yeah.
But
Can I butt in slightly? I'm talking to your editor at the moment on MSN at the same time as doing this, and Gary says to Logan, FAT32, lol, wasn't that like you 10 years ago, Logan?
Whoa!
Oh!
Stop the press.
We have to get him. He can do those zingers in person. Anyway, maybe next week we will twist his arm to get him on next week.
Wow, that was nuclear.
Hey, I'm just the messenger. I'm just the messenger.
And no, you go too. You know what they did to the messenger?
But yeah, so speaking of both error messages and Creative Assembly, one of the three games I'm reviewing this month is Stormrise, which I guess that was done by Creative Assembly's Australian studio.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's being done. It was done primarily as a console RTS. Like they've got like some, you know, I was watching the video trailers for it, and they're saying, oh, you know, Revolution is coming to RTS on the console. So, you know, it's obviously not a PC focused game. And apparently they don't care about selling any of it on the PC because they have done something that nobody besides Microsoft had the, I don't know if it's the balls or the lack of brains to do, and they're requiring DirectX 10 / Vista to play it. So it says you need Vista or later to play it, which is absurd. I don't
understand why they don't also require that it can only be bought on Tuesdays and you can only play it in briefs, not boxers, only in briefs.
Right. Yeah, it's insane. And the worst part was, you know, I saw, okay, it requires Vista. I'll go home and play it on my Windows 7 machine. Nope, didn't work. that's obviously because it's in beta. I mean, Windows 7 has DirectX 11, not just 10. But you know, it freaked out when I tried to install it on the beta.
Stormwise to me seems like just a bit of a disaster project, kind of written all over it from scratch. I mean, making RTS on a console, I just sit there and think, why are you doing this? What are you trying to do anyway? Their kind of main selling feature for us on the consoles is we've got a special feature called Whip It or Whip Control, which sounds vaguely dirty and just seems to be another excuse for trying to explain that the stick doesn't really work, but we've kind of built a feature around it. You call a game Stormrise, you've basically created the most generic title for anything ever.
Yeah.
And now the Vista thing and the DirectX 10 thing. It just gives me a headache.
Well, this is ever so slightly better than what Microsoft did with Halo 2 and Shadowrun, because those games didn't even use DirectX 10 and they required Vista. So they were requiring Vista without any of the benefits of requiring Vista.
Actually, I would argue that it's actually worse because Microsoft seems to have learned its lesson.
Right, but
what did Stormrise learn?
Well, the lesson Microsoft learned was just don't put any games out on PC at all. You know that. I wouldn't say they learned their lesson.
Let's not kind of make that lesson to publicly available.
I'd say they learned the wrong lesson. But just to reflect how badly they're going to handicap their sales here by requiring DirectX 10. And there was an interview which is linked on our delicious links where they're explained. You know why they did this. It was apparently an easier transition, an easier porting job. They had like fewer difficulties getting it to work on DirectX 10 than they would have been on DirectX 9. But I don't think it was worth it, and here's why. Because on Steam's 2009 February 2009 survey, hardware survey, the number of people, the percentage of people running Windows Vista is right around 30%, 35%. Excuse me. Okay, so right there, you're limiting yourself to you know, just a third of the available gaming people out there playing games on the PC, assuming that Steam is a valid sample of that, which you know it probably is. And then you look at the DirectX 10 capable CPUs and or GPUs, sorry, and let's see that would be right around 22.8%. So that's less than a quarter. All right. And then the really damning part is the DirectX 10 systems, Vista with DirectX 10 GPU. Anyone want to guess what the percentage is? 5.79%.
Holy gosh.
Yeah,
can you do kind of Venn diagrams to work out what percentage of people actually have all that stuff? Or is the Steam hardware survey a bit?
It does not. If it lets you do that, I'm not sure how to do it.
Like, I guess though, if you've got DirectX 10, then you've got to have Vista, haven't you? Is that still true?
Right. Right. Yeah. DirectX 10 does not go back to XP, which is another of Microsoft's really stupid decisions. This will really get people to upgrade to Vista. Well, obviously it did not. It's just mind blowing that Creative Assembly would do that.
Yeah, and not only does it cut out that 95%, but in being in the 5%, I have Vista, I have a DirectX 10 card. I'm not going to want to buy this game because I know 95% of the people aren't going to be playing it.
Well, that's true. And it's designed as a console game. It's not designed with the PC in mind. You know, I haven't played it yet because I couldn't install it, which I'm sure a lot of people will run into that same problem. But yeah.
I think it's really difficult as well because it's one of the things. PC gaming is amazing. It's a brilliant place to play games, but there's so many reasons for you not to play on PC. And one of them will be when, you know, you're just a normal guy on the street, you pick up this game, you go home, you install it, it goes, can't play it. Why not? Because you need to spend £200 on a new graphics card, or $1,000 now, depending on the exchange rate.
we're going to have to settle this in Empire Total.
It's just damaging to the PC as a platform itself when people
edit
stuff like this.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have a DX10 graphics card and you don't have Vista, and Vista itself is going to cost you, say, $150 to upgrade to, and then a graphics card, you can get a DX10, a good DX10 graphics card for another $150. But that's $300 right there. You know, that's crappy.
And just the overall sense that, oh, no, I have to be vigilant over one more thing, you know. It didn't like the operating system I use, you know. It's a pile on, you know.
Right. I mean, it would be one thing if it would work on the Windows 7 beta, which is, you know, free right now. But no, it doesn't do that. So you have to buy Vista.
So why do you think they're doing? Why even bother releasing it on the PC like this? Do you think Microsoft pays these companies to try and promote Vista?
No.
Or why would they limit it to Vista only? Just technical reasons?
Yeah, like they thought it would be easier to port it over using DirectX 10 than DirectX 9. Because, like, according to the interview that's linked, they claim that they had an easier time porting it from the Xbox to the PC using DirectX 10.
So, obviously, this seems like a really bad business choice. Do you think they just don't realize how much of the market doesn't have that?
I can't believe that they wouldn't have. They got access to the, at the very least, the Steam surveys. You know, their public information. That should give them an idea. It's I don't know why they wouldn't.
It's unfathomable. I just couldn't imagine a reason why. You know, any good reason why they would go this way.
I mean, they spent all their resources developing the round peg for the square hole to get the RTS on the console. Now they don't really care about the PC. So, I don't know.
Why even put it out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at least with Endwar, which also was designed for the console, but, you know, ported over to the PC. I just reviewed that, and I kind of enjoyed it because the voice control actually worked, and, you know, I was able to play it.
Did you play that in the office, Dan, by any chance?
I did not. That would. and like even you know my fiance was kind of driven nuts by me saying, you know, unit one, move to Bravo. You know, she came into the room to make fun of me and tell me to shut up every 5 or 10 minutes I was playing that. So
I hope your reply was fiance, tea please.
I tried to keep it down. That game was at least enjoyable. Hopefully they've put a little bit of effort into the control scheme, and I'll be able to talk about it next week. But right now I haven't been able to play it yet. I'll have to play that one in the office because I have Vista on this machine here, but not at home anymore. So more on that later. In the meantime, a game that is selling well is Dawn of War 2, which has topped the NPD charts for February 15th to 21st, which, you know, beats out, you know, The Sims and World of Warcraft, well, all the unstoppable juggernauts that are always on top of that list. Of course, you know, the NPD charts, we always, you know, put a caveat there, which, you know, this means very little considering online sales. However, Dawn of War 2 is also, you know, on Steam and probably doing very well there. So it's great to see Relic doing well there.
Yeah, what do you guys make of Dawn of War 2? Because I've got kind of mixed feelings about it, to be honest.
I enjoy it a lot. I mean, I've been playing the single player campaign a lot. I'm on like my third playthrough right now. I upped the difficulty to Captain, which I do have some problems with the difficulty how it ramps up, because like the boss guys tend to one shot your squads, which is really
yeah.
But you know, it's more challenging. I've got to get some of these guys to play co-op with me to help me take some of those guys out. Because it's kind of frustrating to get almost the end of a level and then have half your squad wiped out in the last fight, and you lose like most of your score because of that. But I enjoy the tactical gameplay. It reminds me a lot of Freedom Force, which I was a big fan of.
Yeah, I remember Freedom Force. That was great.
Yeah. And you know, just the having a bunch of special abilities that you can use and coordinate to use them to be really well together. And when you really pull off a good attack on a group of enemies, it's really a devastating blow. You take them all out without really taking any hits, and it's a rush. But I do think that in single player it is more of an action RPG than it is an RTS.
I mean, I do really like it. Well, I like it. I don't really like it. I think there's parts of it I look at and think, well, if you're going to repeat the same mission again and again and again, you should make it a really good mission. But actually, it just feels, you know, it's not a great kind of template. I don't feel like I'm using strategy when I defeat it. I feel like I'm kind of micromanaging a WoW raid more than anything else. Like particularly the boss fights. You know, it's even saying that, you know, boss fights in a strategy game.
Right.
I want to fight these four, like something equivalent to what I'm doing, and outwit someone, not spam attacks and dodge incoming meteors. And that's
what
the
that's what the multiplayer is for. You know, it's a dramatically different game too.
It is, but I think the multiplayer is. I mean, I'm not a big multiplayer RTS guy. I like playing skirmishes, and I like playing kind of. When I play multiplayer, I like doing 2v2 or 3v3, but it's against an AI. So, you know, like in our office, we'll play a lot of subcom, where it's two of us on the same side taking on like six or seven different AIs. And that's kind of what I really like out of RTSs. And it just feels like Dawn of War 2. I appreciate what they've done. I can admire it, but I'll never really love it.
Yeah, if you're really into a game like Supreme Commander, it's a very different mode. I mean, it's not about necessarily destroying your enemy. It's about holding territory. And Supreme Commander, yeah, in particular, allows you to turtle up and you know, generate most of your resources from your base. At least it did before.
That's right.
Before Forge Alliance came out, then they yeah, really started encouraging you to branch out, but. And take more territory, but it's a very different style of play. That also, the units in Dawn of War are less disposable. In Supreme Commander, you can, you know, lasso select like a huge army of guys, throw them at the enemy, go do other things, manage other things, and then come back and maybe tweak a few things in the battle to make sure the right guys are attacking the right things. But in Dawn of War, you really have to get in there and control your guys.
It does, like RTS games at the moment, they feel like everyone's trying to work out what RTS games should be, because we can no longer do Command and Conquer, and you have things like, you know, stupid stuff like Stormrise with its kind of and End War, which, you know, mess about there. You have guys like Relic trying to fix a way of, you know, let's just make it all about the combat, let's kind of fix the base building, and then you look at what Blizzard are doing with StarCraft, and it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with anything in the RTS genre. You know, it's really good. Just make it good. Don't have to try and mess around with, you know, silly things like innovation. You know, who needs innovation? I'm starting to sound like a grumpy old man.
I think a big part of that, though, is everybody sees StarCraft II coming. They want to carve out their own little niche that's a little bit different from StarCraft. They have their own community, so that when StarCraft II comes, it doesn't wipe them out. Which, you know, it kind of threatens to. I mean, it may be a little bit of an exaggeration. I mean, StarCraft is not the end all be all of RTSs. You know, it's a great game. It's you know, by far the longest, most played RTS ever. But it's not for everybody. But the kind of perception in the RTS community is that it is kind of the second coming. So
yeah,
I think everybody wants to get out of its way and do something a little bit different.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. you know, it is driving innovation. I do like to see innovation because who wants to play the same Command and Conquer again and again and again? I mean, we do want to have that ability to play that same game, but that's what the Command and Conquer series is for. So, yeah, hopefully, I do like that Dawn of War 2 was a different game than Dawn of War 1. And
have you played like Red Alert 3 at all? Like,
I have, yeah.
What do you think of it?
I enjoyed it. It's a little bit faster pace than I like. Of course, there's a large number of RTS fans out there screaming at me right now that RTS is supposed to be fast paced and StarCraft 1 is supposed to be played on the fastest possible speed because it's if you're not doing it like that, you're a slow old man. But I
am a slow old man though. I mean, that's entirely true.
Right. It's a little bit faster paced than I like. Units die really quickly, but I think it makes up for a lot in style. Right. Some people hate the graphics. I thought the graphics were, they're colorful, they're exaggerated. I think it's nice to look at. I think the gameplay has a lot of interesting counters because of all the special abilities. There doesn't seem to be like a major spamming problem of one unit. They seem to be on top of balancing it. So, it's very enjoyable. I know Evan and Josh have been playing a ton of it. I have been otherwise occupied with, actually, since the Solar Empire has gotten me again, but yeah.
Because Red Alert seems to be like the complete counter to my own argument, which is where the hell do you go from Red Alert 3? Because you've been making there must be about 10 Command and Conquer games now, just kind of constantly narrowing in on the same elements. And
right, but Red Alert 3 did deviate quite a bit from the standard CNC formula. I mean, they changed the resource model for one thing, and they also gave every unit a secondary ability, which
is
done before. So they do shake it up a little bit. They're not making the same game over and over again. And of course, every time they do shake it up, people yell and scream, "How could you do this?" But it's a little bit of innovation, a little bit of something new. I like to see that, even if it's not perfect.
Fair enough. Also, it's got lots of really, really hot totty in it, which you've got to just kind of congratulate people on their casting.
that is true. They did an excellent job of the stunt casting. I must applaud them on Gemma Atkinson in particular. let's see. We've also got on our list here BioWare. Has not been feeling the pain that everybody else seems to be feeling in the economic downturn. EA had laid off a bunch of people. It was kind of funny. We were out to dinner with some BioWare guys on the day that EA announced some layoffs, and we asked them, is BioWare feeling any pain? And they're like, what layoffs? they hadn't even heard about it. They are not only not laying people off, they're opening a new studio in Quebec, Canada, to work on Mass Effect 2, or at least to help out with their Edmonton, Alberta studio working on Mass Effect 2. That just goes to show that if you make something really good, you're going to be able to survive this downturn. People are still going to buy your games.
Yeah.
They put out a trailer for Mass Effect 2. Did everybody see that?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was weird, wasn't it? Was it really strange?
It was a little bit light on content. I mean, it showed a Geth, So I guess we know they're in it. I think we kind of knew that already. I'm going to go ahead and spoil the trailer for people. So if you don't want to have the trailer spoiled for you, you can skip ahead about 2 minutes. They said they had like a display showing Shepard, which is your character, and then like killed in action. I already knew that because I died a bunch of times beating that game. So there's like no new information, but it might be interesting to see how they're planning to roll that into the plot. Maybe you fake your own death or something, because I can't imagine they would have a whole different character. And if they did, they would have had a path in the first game where you could like sacrifice yourself to save the world, like or save the
yeah.
It's got to be some like faking your own death to
because they. They've been making loads of noise about holding on to your save game as well, haven't they? So they
have.
They obviously kind of want to continue the story straight off. And I don't know about you, but I definitely survived Mass Effect, if only because I wanted to go with the blue girl again.
Very true. Yeah, I got a little bit of blowback from some readers in my review of that when I said that that there was really only one ending of Mass Effect 1, which, you know, the people are like, what are you talking about? You can make this decision which causes, you know, all these people to die, or this decision which saves them, and blah blah blah. But what I was talking about there was, like, there's a point in the end where the bad guy says, you know, join me and we'll destroy the universe together, you know. But it automatically just says, nope, screw you, I'm gonna save the universe. You know, that's kind of a classic RPG moment, like where they could really,
yeah,
they really go either way, and they did that in KOTOR.
That's true.
I was shocked when it's like, what? There's no option to just, you know, turn on my friends and kill them here. But you know, I probably because they wanted, you know, they knew this was going to be a trilogy, so they wanted to set it up so that no matter what you did, they can pick it up and continue that way. Whereas if you're evil, that's kind of that's the end of the universe. So
kind of a dick move, though, to want to end the universe. I'd have to say, Dan, like, if you're kind of wanting that, to worry about
that's
you.
On the cold side. Yeah.
Well, you know, it makes me feel like a big man to say I'm gonna be a good guy. You know, I had the option to be evil, but I'm gonna be good. That reflects my moral character. That shows I'm a good person.
Dan, lie down and talk about your childhood. Come on.
Yeah, it's like in Fallout. You know, you have that decision to be good or evil, you know, or you have the decision to you know. Well, I won't spoil it for everybody, but let me go back and spoil KOTOR 1 for everybody, since that's like 7 years old. Or how old is that? It's probably five years old.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. So, like in that, you had the option to turn on not only your friends but also, you know, become a Sith and turn on your friends and then turn on your, you know, your master, you know, the other Sith. I guess he was not your master, but the other Sith, because that's what Sith do. They turn on each other. So you basically kill everybody and become, you know, the new Dark Lord of the Sith and you know, the Emperor, basically. And when they did KOTOR 2, they did basically just said, okay, the good ending was the right one, you know. So that's one way to do it, and that's what a lot of RPGs do. I thought that they could have done that in Mass Effect, and that's kind of what I thought was missing about the ending of that one. But, you know, it's still a great game. I loved it. So, and another RPGs, well, I guess, Stalker's kind of an RPG, right? It's a shooter RPG.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a stretch.
Right, it's a shooter with RPG elements, whereas like Fallout is like an RPG with shooter mechanics. But okay, so Stalker. That's my transition to Stalker. There is an early version of Stalker available for download. You can also find that in our delicious links. It's the version from like 2004, like before, I think it's before THQ picked it up as the publisher. And told them, okay, you've got to be realistic about this and cut out some of these features you're never going to finish, and you know, finally put out a game that was less ambitious than GSC Game World had in mind, I guess, but it was actually a complete finished game. So they actually went back and they put this game up for free, this early version of it, an alpha, I believe, and you can download that and try it out. It's not guaranteed to work on your system. It's not supported, so you know, no bitching if it doesn't work. But Tim, you guys have been playing with it, right?
Yeah, and actually we've got our work experience guy who's been playing it over the last couple of days, and just been kind of watching him have a look at it. And it's weird because it looks like Stalker. The interface is pretty much the same. You know, the texture sets and everything else are basically the same. But it's just more kind of runny-gunny stuff. But it is kind of strange thinking, hang on, if this was ready in 2004?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the game came out in 2007, possibly, maybe 2000. Yeah, about 2007. What did they do for 3 years?
Apparently it took that long to cut out features.
Yeah. Let's just leave it at that, shall we?
But
to be completely fair, it's only a couple of levels. It's not like the full game or anything. It feels very prototypey, but. No, it's kind of a fascinating thing to look at.
Right, and it's on the forums of gsc-game.com, and again, the link is in our delicious links. Our delicious page, by the way, is delicious.com/bcgamerpodcast. So another shocker here. It looks like Square Enix is actually going to buy Eidos. When they said they were putting in a bid a couple weeks ago, I'm like, okay, that's interesting. That, you know, I kind of doubt if that's actually going to happen. There's got to be some other bidders that, you know, that somebody else is going to come in higher. But no, apparently it's going to happen. Square Enix is going to buy like Tomb Raider and you know Hitman and all their other franchises and take over their operations. It's crazy.
Eidos.
Eidos. Yeah.
Eidos. This is a really crazy thought, but the next Final Fantasy Versus games are going to be mental. Absolutely mad. You're going to have Lara Croft and J.C. Denton and Garrett fighting Donald Duck. And,
and it's about time.
Yeah.
Yes. And that dude with the big sword, whose name I forget because Final Fantasy is actually a bit rubbish and no one actually likes to admit that. you know, the guy with the sword, him.
Swordy McSwordson.
Swordy McSwordon the second.
Yeah.
Or actually XXX1135.
Right. I am, however, you know, very happy to see, you know, the Eidos like not like liquidate or anything like that. And I'm happy to see Square like actually take an interest in PC gaming, like, you know, Western gaming in general, that like, you know, kind of diversify from the Final Fantasy stuff, which I guess nobody here likes that much. Josh, do you like Final Fantasy?
I have never played a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, I played original NES, yeah. And it's like, this is not for me. So, and ever since then, their hair just got bigger and their swords got bigger and it got weird. I'm glad to see them doing something other than that. They're also doing Supreme Commander 2. They're publishing that from Gas Powered. So that's obviously a very PC focused game. So, they're not just gonna, you know, buy up Eidos and do all console stuff, which is also good news. So, hopefully they will they'll, you know, let these guys do what they do best and you know not turn them all into Final Fantasy esque stuff.
It is a strange situation though, isn't it? Because Eidos itself was bought by SCI a little over about a year and a half ago,
right?
And now that kind of SCI Eidos company has been bought again, which maybe suggests that the first investment wasn't particularly wise. And
possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Although
head should roll.
Yeah. I mean, they made some good selling games. I mean, the Tomb Raider series, like the revitalization of that, has done pretty well. I mean, like, I guess.
Yeah, but they had crazy expectations for that. Like they've called it underperforming, and it sold over a million. How is that underperforming?
Well, I guess it. One of them sold like 6 million, and then like the next one sold 3 million, and then Underworld sold 1.5 million. So I guess they were not adjusting their expectations for the, you know, gradual decline of interest in you know the renewed series. So that was probably their problem, and you know that'll screw up a company's like value if they keep saying
that is true.
We're expecting to make a bajillion dollars, and then they only make half a bajillion dollars, and they still made a bunch of money, but everybody says, oh, you didn't live up to your expectations, so we think you're not worth anything, which is insane, but whatever.
Welcome to capitalism.
Dan's take on global finance.
Right. Hey, you know, if they had me running things, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in now.
What mess because would we be in?
We'd be in an entirely bigger mess.
The one that you'd probably control. One that you probably control through hotkeys.
Right, right.
Which is,
Good Old Games now has Duke Nukem. Check that out. I guess the controls are very old school. They didn't update those, which is unfortunate.
I can't believe that I enjoyed that game as much as I did back then with those controls. I'm just blown away.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, it is Duke Nukem 3D. Yeah.
By the way, has anyone seen the Legend of Chun-Li movie, the Street Fighter movie?
No, I have not.
No, no. No, good. That's for the best. But the PC version of Street Fighter 4 has unfortunately been delayed until summer. I guess they want to add in online multiplayer, which like the consoles don't have, at least not in the same way.
You know what's interesting is that the arcade cabinets are actually Windows PCs just running Street Fighter.
Right, but they don't have multiplayer in like online multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah, true.
The Xbox versions do, though.
Yeah, I guess it's different. Apparently, if it's not being run through Live, which hopefully it's not,
okay.
Then they have to build their own multiplayer service. So apparently,
I'm sure that would be a great success.
Right, and Capcom has said, as a result of this extra time, the PC version may end up being the definitive version. So, maybe it will. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. See what they do.
I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait. I got it on PS3.
I can't blame you for that either.
Yeah.
It's a console game by definition almost. So, also demos out now. There's a demo of Last Remnant from Square. There is Tom Clancy's Hawks out now. Is anybody out there playing them? Please, come and post on our podcast thread at PCGamerPodcast.com and let us know what you think of those. Last Remnant in particular, I'm interested to know what PC gamers out there think of it. We got a lot of requests last week. We forgot to mention that the Quake Live beta has it's gone.
Oh yeah,
the beta went live yesterday. I haven't played.
No, it just actually went live. That it launched, correct?
Well, no, it's a beta though.
Oh, okay. I was under the understanding that it actually launched for everybody.
No, well, it did. It's an open beta.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So you can go there and you can wait in line behind like 10,000, 20,000 other people to play it.
and there's like, only two avatars right now, which is the duck and the guy with the sword.
Right. But literally, there have been lines of almost 30,000 people to play it.
Oh my gosh!
Because it is still in beta. They haven't scaled up, and they didn't want the servers to just explode. So they have it limited, and there's a queue. So it's not fully up there. And so absolutely go and try it, but expect to wait. Also, the Battlefield Heroes Beta 2 is also alive, but it's not as open. That's a little harder to get into. While you're at it, you can try the Demigod Beta, which is also open, but that won't be free after launch, so it's a little bit of a different animal. And with that, let's move into questions.
I don't have any questions.
Hey PC Gaming Podcast crew, this is DJ from Tampa, and I had a couple questions for you for this podcast. One of them was from your April issue, the Logan article on the 3D shooting spree. I was wondering, what do you guys think about the staying power for the glasses and the monitors for the 3D? Do you think it's got staying power and it'll be around in 5 years, or it's something that we probably will not hear about after about a year? And the other question is, when is your new EIC going to be on the podcast? I love listening to you guys. Take care.
Well, for the first part, I would say the products that, like, for example, the products you saw on that page, no. It's not going to happen. They cost too much money, and what you get is, it's entertaining. It's something to do if you go to the arcade, and spend 75 cents a pop for, it's really cool. Left 4 Dead with 3D is fantastic, but is it perfectly playable without it? Absolutely. And the compromises you have to make, like using with NVIDIA's, the far superior method is with NVIDIA's 3D vision goggles, but then you're stuck with a monitor that displays at 1680 by 1050. And that's just
which is fine, but the big problem I saw with it was that it doubles the system requirements for anything you do because it's rendering it twice.
Yeah.
So I mean that's pretty absurd. I mean unless you have like a ridiculous amount of money, which nobody does right now. Why would you do that?
Oh, yeah. Speak for yourself.
The guy was saying, like, in 5 years, what's going to happen? Well, in 5 years, it's 120 hertz monitors are probably going to be commonplace. Most LCDs right now run at 60 hertz, and the 120 hertz ones, which is what the other system uses. What was the name of those people? In IZ3D, yeah. They actually both. both of them use a monitor that runs at 120 hertz. So you have two frames running at 60 hertz sort of concurrently. And I think, you know, those monitors will be commonplace. So then in the future, you know, maybe in a couple of years, you'll already have a 120 hertz monitor. And then, hey, here's $50 for an extra pair of 3D glasses. Wouldn't this be cool? And you know what? It does look really cool. But it's just too much money for too many compromises today. But in 3 years, I think it's going to be a lot different. And I think a lot of games are going to have 3D built in, probably just as many as have multiplayer built in today.
Yeah, and it could become like PhysX is now. I mean, it's something that's there. It's kind of in the background. If you have the hardware to use it, great. If not, it's not hurting anything. It's not costing you anything extra. So
I think that's actually a really apt comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm apt. And as for the second part of the question, like I said at the top of the podcast, we will twist Gary's arm to get him on next week.
Twist!
He's shy.
Hey guys, this is Ben from Boston. I played a fair amount of PC games competitively, from Counter-Strike a few years ago to Team Fortress 2 today. I'd like to hear what you guys think about the future of competitive gaming, both in general and specifically on the PC.
Actually, I'd like to hear more of that voice. It was very, just very official and sort of...
Yeah, that should be the voice of competitive gaming.
Yeah, it should be.
You know, I went to this... Okay, so last summer they had this small little LAN party here in Salt Lake, and they set up a really cool tournament stage where it was just amateurs, and it was one of the most fun things I've ever seen. And so the idea of competitive gaming is super fun and awesome to watch, I think, if it's done right, but it just doesn't seem... I don't know where to find it, and I guess I haven't looked hard enough, so I don't really
know. I've got a bunch of rants about pro gaming, actually, because we had a showdown event, kind of a bit like yours, mm-hmm. a little while ago, and we put up a bunch of money for a TF2 competition, and watching it was absolutely amazing, utterly brilliant, and the skills on show were astonishing. But also, the thing about TF2 is that because it has the kind of cartoon presentation and everything is everything that happens is incredibly visual compared to Counter-Strike or Call of Duty, where stuff just falls over and you have no real idea. It felt like a great spectator sport, as other FPSs I think are very difficult to show. I honestly think that if competitive gaming is going to grow, it's about the presentation of the games themselves rather than necessarily, just kind of let's put them on TV and the rest of it. The games themselves have to evolve to a level where they can be shown.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think the idea of live broadcasting of gaming events is terrible because unless you have like 30 guys as playing as spectators in the game, and the producer can somehow identify exactly where the action is going to happen, what angle to view things from, instantly, and that would take greater reflexes than a professional StarCraft player to be able to do that, I think. So what I think they have to do is record the games, maybe do the commentary live, maybe do that live, but record the games, and then go back and cut it together from the recording to actually show what's going on, because it is generally too fast and too too hectic to really get an idea of what's going on for a spectator. And nobody's really done that yet. Nobody's found a really effective way to make that work. Also, I think people, for a professional team or for somebody to have a really good identifiable persona in a game, they have to make custom avatars for them in the game, so that you can tell at a glance who's who. If I'm looking even at Team Fortress. If I'm looking at the best TF2 player in the world, and he looks like everybody else in the game, that's a little bit difficult for me, because with football and American football for you, Tim, or with soccer or whatever, they have jerseys with uniform numbers, so you can tell who's who. I think that's a big part of it. You know who to watch. You've heard about this guy. He's somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I think I've watched a few. Warcraft, Arena, they tried to make it a pro sport for a while. And, with video games, there just seems to be a lot more going on that you can't just readily see. Like, if you're watching football or soccer, you can see the guy do a step over and juke the guy out. But a lot of times you can't see what abilities they're using. It's a lot more difficult to to understand just by watching what's going on, I think, than just other sports.
You know, I do want to point out that the Voom, I believe it was Voom HD Network, did have sort of competitive gaming channel thing going on for a while where they did record competitive matches and then cut them, just like you were talking about. And we featured them a couple of years ago, but I haven't really kept up with them. So I'm going to look into that, see if they're still on the air and what's going on over there, because they had some really cool ideas, including a professional sports videographer who developed his own USB-connected in-game camera. So he could float around the field and, like, you know, film Unreal Tournament.
Right.
Yeah, it was terrific. So I'm going to find that about and get back to you and maybe next week.
I will say that I watched Norm played Vagabond in Quake.
Yes.
This past weekend. That was my first time really watching, like, an event live like that.
That was pretty cool, actually. Yeah, I was just sort of watching that casually. And, like, man, that was really cool seeing those skills on display, because Vagabond was really, really good at Quake 3.
Yeah, impressive. And one thing, like Dan was saying, that they had was Vagabond was actually a Sonic the Hedgehog character, so it was real easy to tell, you know, who was who.
Right. But another thing I want to give those guys a lot of credit for is the commentators on there. I guess it was Havoc and who?
Vitor? Oh, Snowman. Yeah.
Right. So they did a really good job with the commentary. They actually knew what they were talking about. They weren't like you know, trying to be extreme like the most like the televised matches I've seen, and I've seen a couple, but the commentary always really turned me off because they were trying too hard. These guys knew their stuff and they were you know actually giving some informative insight, and that's got to be a big part of it because for me I can't stand to even watch televised sports because the commentators are just so dumb. They just say the most amazingly stupid things to fill airtime. It shocks me. It's like, oh, he sure did throw that ball into that hole there. And you know, not many people know this, but in order to win the game, you have to score more points than the other team, and that's what they just did. You know, that's the kind of thing that just makes me
I just love when they say, I think both teams really want to win today. Like, right, are you serious?
you think they do, huh? So.
Hi, this is Fireman from New York. I have a question about Fallout 3. I know that if you only play the main game without DLCs, your character caps at like level 20. But my question is this. Even though I'm not interested in playing the DLC, you know, the Anchorage in Alaska doesn't appeal to me, but will that make my main character be able to go to level 30? And with the next one, if even if I don't play that X new DLC that comes after, will it cap my character at level 40? Because if it does, then I'm very well going to do it. Because, I mean, that's the benefit of doing it, even though you're not doing the actual quest. Let me know. Keep up the good podcast. And I love you guys, especially Logan. Bye.
I was gonna say he totally lost me there.
Broken Steel is the one that ups the level cap to 30, so it's not out quite yet.
Operation Anchorage does not raise your level cap.
Yeah.
Don't get Operation Anchorage if you're not interested in doing the quest, because that's all it gives you, that and the bonus gear at the end.
Are there not mods out that increase the level cap or remove
the level cap? It's at 20. There are mods that will let you go higher than 20. So that's a free option.
Well, that's cool. And then what happens? Do you think if you install the DLC, do you think it resets, like on top of the mod?
I think if you install the DLC, I'm not sure how that works in conjunction with mods. Actually,
yeah,
that's a good question.
And also, if you've been adventuring since you've hit the level cap, your experience sort of does not count. Once Broken Steel comes out, you will not be able to just pop level 30. If you have enough experience points, you'll actually have to start a level 20 and gain experience up there. So we learned that on the OXM cast. We asked someone from Bethesda. So.
Like, especially in a game like Fallout, I don't understand people that want to keep playing even though they're not getting experience.
Right, yeah.
Because, I mean, in WoW, I kind of get it because you're getting you know,
gear and stuff.
Elite gear.
Yeah.
And to some extent, you can do that in Fallout, but there's not as nearly as much gear in Fallout as there is in WoW. So, like, you get some pretty high end stuff, and that's as high as you're going to get. You can collect some extra books and stuff, and get, you know, some extra skills. But I mean, and also once you're at level 20, combat is so easy that I don't really want to go any higher. You know.
Yeah.
Unless, like, I mean, headshot, headshot, headshot.
Maybe everybody got, or maybe someone's really mad at a certain town and they just want to kill everybody.
you can do that at you know, level 15. You can get away with killing nearly any town you want.
Probably.
Yeah. And I
just say, I love you too, man.
So, and I guess the pit is due out pretty soon this month. So let's move on to playlists. Logan, what are you playing?
You know, I downloaded Pure Pinball 2 from GOG.com because I love pinball sims, and that was a really good one. And it is still a good one. But I was going to play GTA 4, but then I got sucked in because I remembered Future Pinball. FuturePinball.com, totally awesome. It's a free sort of pinball construction set, and you can go to the site, not only download the construction set, but bagfuls of cool tables that other people have built, user design tables, and they're amazing. It's the simulation, you know, it's not the highest end thing in the world, but the physics feels just right, and the tables are fantastic. FuturePinball.com. I'm all over it. See you there.
And Logan, how much free pinball are they giving you for that endorsement?
lots and lots.
They're giving you lots of free products from their, you know, free pinball site.
And they let me post on the forum for no charge. I mean, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, so obviously they have no money to give. So
yeah. I get a Hot Wheel, you know, every now and then.
That was an endorsement of love.
Josh, I love Future Pinball too, man.
Yeah. Josh, what are you playing?
I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft. I've been leveling up a Protection Paladin, which has been excellent. Playing some EVE Online. I'm excited because you have to, like, spend a lot of time training skills or whatever, and so I've been training learning skills early on, which are really boring, but they make the rest of your training go faster, so I'm finally starting to train some weapon stuff. I'm excited about that. And a lot of Red Alert 3 with my brother. This has been good, going through the Soviet campaign again. So excellent.
Weren't you playing co-op?
Yeah, we're playing co-op through the campaign.
Didn't you do the shutdown day on the Tabula Rasa servers? Was that you?
Yeah, I did that. I almost forgot about that on
Saturday.
That
sounded so cool because I was busy and I saw the Twitters about it, and I was like, man, that would be such a cool event just to be there for, like, when they push off, you know? Like,
it's like, well, yeah. Wow, you know, it's only been shut down a few days, and you've already forgotten about it.
That's
gone and forgotten.
It is dead to me now. But, no, I'm going to have a bid on it in the next issue, June issue. So.
Cool. Eddie, what are you playing?
I've been dedicating this game to Logan. No, I've been playing Tomb Raider Underworld, actually. And it's so good. It took a little bit of getting used to the disconnect between the fluidity of Mirror's Edge's gameplay and sort of a little bit rigidity in this gameplay. But now I'm, like, totally immersed in the huge worlds and the puzzles and the jumping around and the shooting.
You ever just stand there and look around? You're like, damn.
I sort of just stand there and push the pistols and watch them shoot and then go, damn.
So, I mean, you know Lara could, like, kick Faith's ass up and down the stairs,
oh,
right?
Oh, for sure.
I mean,
like, that's the difference.
No question.
That's why it's okay, you know?
Like, well, she's,
Faith can wall run, more, but, you know, whatever.
Lara's definitely more trigger happy.
Oh, yeah, especially when I'm in control.
Yeah, but you know what? If she just, like, stuck with her little toe, she could still kick Faith's ass. Seriously.
Yeah.
And Faith gets everything, like, even dual Gatlings, you know?
And
Lara would still win.
Man, there's something, like, I haven't played Tomb Raider since, like, Tomb Raider 2. And so I didn't know that the batshit crazy story is going on.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? But it's still
She's been through some rough times,
yeah.
Lara. Yeah, I think if you haven't played Tomb Raider a long time, then now's the time.
Yeah, it's so fun.
Yeah, they did well.
And
I love Tomb Raider,
someone on Steam when I was playing were like, I feel it is my duty to inform you that Tomb Raider is the worst gaming franchise ever. Thank you. And I thought that was like the most hilarious thing I'd heard.
I feel it is my duty.
Wait, that was from where?
I don't know, just one of my Steam friends when I was playing it. And I was like, have you played that's it? Like, it's great.
That's like having an invisible friend or an imaginary friend who just pops up behind your shoulder and goes, I feel it is my duty to inform you you're playing a crappy game.
But it's a good game, so come on now.
By the way, your hair looks terrible.
So should DICE develop the next Tomb Raider?
Oh, man, that would be wicked badass. Holy crap.
No, I love what Crystal Dynamics is doing. Stop. Stop this.
You're right, but stop like, this. Dude.
Don't even think it.
Oh, the
stop
motion
it.
In Mirror's Edge is so
stop
good.
It. Stop it. Stop it. Right now. Cut him off. Dan. Oh, wait. Okay. He's the producer.
Can or should the developers of Final Fantasy develop the next Tomb Raider? Is that a more realistic possibility?
No comment.
You're done.
Yeah.
Laura would have a sword three times her body mass. And, yeah.
Hair would be bigger than her boobs.
Yeah. And her boobs would be guns.
Hey, wait, that's a good idea.
I might get behind that. So Logan and Andy, I just got a new video card. Is Tomb Raider Underworld a good game to play to kind of test it out?
Oh, I mean, you know, not really, probably. I mean, it's a good looking
game. I heard it was
game.
Beautiful.
It is, but it's not going to push, I don't think, anything to the limit.
It will. At 1920, with everything cranked up, yeah, it'll look...
It looks nice.
It's a nice workout.
Yeah.
All right, and I guess I have been playing some Sins of Assyria Empire Entrenchment for review. That's out now. You can get that off of Impulse if you already have Sins. It's a great little expansion for, you know, it's only $10 and it adds things like space stations and mines and enhanced defenses. You know, it does slow down the gameplay a little bit, and it's already pretty slow because it makes it harder to conquer a planet. But at the same time, it also frees up ships from defending planets, so you can make your attacks bigger.
Nice.
And you know, there are ways to overcome all of these defenses. Like mines can be cleared with scouts. The star bases you can take out from afar with a new cruiser that launches torpedoes that take down structures really quickly. So if the star base doesn't have any, if it's just a star base in a system, it's going to be toast. And the enhanced defenses, you know, they're a little bit tougher to get through, but not that much tougher, and their range is limited still. So you know, it's not gonna really stop anybody. And if somebody spends like all their resources building up like a huge minefield and a bunch of defenses in one system, all you have to do is take down every other system, and they're going to be isolated and not have any income. So it doesn't completely ruin the pace of the game. It may slow you down a little bit, but Sins was never a game that people wanted to play really fast anyway. So it's definitely worth the $10, I would say. And next, I'm going to be playing Stormrise. So, but once I get that working. All right, so that'll just about do it for us today. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thank you, Tim Edwards, for joining us for most of the podcast. We will be back next week, same time. Hopefully, I'm going to put a Nerf gun to our new EIC's head to make him come on, we'll see what we can do there. For myself, Logan Decker, Josh Augustine, Andy Bauman, and Tim Edwards, we will see you all next week. Oh, and don't forget to leave us some questions. Andy, what's the number?
Oh, it's 1-877-404-1337, extension 724.
I'm so glad you remember that. Woo. So leave us a one-minute message there, or you can just email us an MP3 question at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Go to pcgamer.com. It'll redirect you to gamesradar/PC. Scroll down to the left on the left side of the page. There will be a link to subscribe if you want to get the magazine. And, yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Your awesome and funny screenshots to letters at pcgamer.com as well.
That too, yes. All right.
Oh, and I have to. Did we talk before about the miracle berries that made sour fruit taste sweet? Because nobody believed me that it existed, and now I just want to say that ThinkGeek now carries. I was flipping through their catalog, and it's totally awesome. They're called Miracle Fruit Tablets. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you.
And on that note,
later, Gators.
By the way, Andy, Tim, Andy. Andy is our producer. Tim is the deputy editor over at PCG UK.
Hi, Tim. Hello. I listen to your podcast, so I sort of already know who you are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I did actually wave then, which is really embarrassing.
Well, eventually we'll have the video conference going on. I haven't played any of it yet because apparently... But Logan, what are you doing?
Sorry. Sorry. I did nothing. Sorry. Go ahead.
Someone's iPhone keeps going off.
Yeah, that's horrific.
That's me, actually. That's me. I'm due to go out and get some beer very shortly. I think I'm going to check that.
Okay. We'll let you bail on us when that happens.
Europeans and their ringtones. We'll talk about that on the next podcast.
Bye-bye now.